I think that has now occurred, so you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, I'm Joy Schiffer-Miller. I'm guardian ad litem for a child by the name of Jacinia H. And I brought this appeal due to the court making a finding in this case on a motion that I had filed to say that the ICWA statutes, both federally and through the state, should not apply with respect to this child. The evidence in the case shows that Jacinia H. was born on the Indian reservation up in South Dakota. And she was the child of Monique M. And Monique M. testified at the temporary custody hearings in this case that when she had Jacinia, she decided that she was going to have her cousin, Lolita E., raise Jacinia, and that she had the baby around 8:20 or 8:40 in the evening and signed paperwork and provided the baby to be left with Lolita to raise.
Counsel, if you're headed towards a merits argument, and before you get to the merits, I want to talk about jurisdiction for just a moment.
Sure.
This is clearly a special proceeding, and in order for there to be jurisdiction, a substantial right of the child must have been affected by the order that the juvenile court made, correct so far?
I agree with that. Yes,
and
I do.
At this point, the only order that the court has made is one essentially saying ICWA and by implication NICWA applies.
I agree with that too.
And the record, at least as I understand it, it does not appear that the juvenile court has entered a pre-adjudication detention order, correct?
Well, there actually is a temporary custody order in the case. But it doesn't relate to whether or not ICWA applies, I guess would be my point.
And Jacinia has not been adjudicated at this point?
She has been adjudicated.
Well,
but
time,
she may not have been adjudicated by the time we had this hearing. And let me just say that one issue that arises in these kinds of cases in juvenile court, it is a sticky wicket to decide whether or not jurisdiction, as far as making an appeal, when do you make that appeal? Because in the event that ICWA does apply, there are all kinds of protections, I guess, available to an Indian child. It changes the burden of proof as far as whether or not the child should remain in the family home. It changes the tenor of evidence that needs to be provided.
But all of those things that you're articulating are things that are going to happen in the future.
Correct.
Have not yet occurred, at least at the time of this order. And it really strikes me, and this is your opportunity to persuade me otherwise, it really strikes me that you simply have an interlocutory order by a judge saying, I think this law applies, and the judge could change her mind the next day.
I would submit that she couldn't change her mind the next day. I mean, I think that we do have an interlocutory order that applies, and as in many cases in juvenile court, if there's been a determination of some sort that does apply or an order has been made, then we have the Court of Appeals many times saying, well, this is just a continuation of a prior order being made, and so if I don't appeal...
That's when you're affecting something's placement, you're affecting conditions of some sort of dispositional order. Haven't cited to me, it's been on the brief, and I want to show you the chance. Any instance where the court has simply said, I think this law applies, and that in and of itself, that declaration, affects a substantial right.
Well, as I said, I think because we are careful practitioners, I felt duty bound to bring this appeal, because if I did not bring this appeal, then the court would later say, you did not bring that appeal timely.
you know, it was determined that the law did apply, and the judge determined that, I believe, in 2 days before we had the adjudication hearing is when she made the determination that the law applied. And so then we had to go through a trial and had to present...
But trial, we don't have any of the trial.
Because none of that's on appeal. Well, actually, I have to think about that, because I think, you know, the sole and only appeal with respect to this case is whether or not it would apply. And so
there's no appeal from an adjudication order. I beg your pardon.
Right. And I think now that I think about it, there were two cases, because Jacinia has a younger sister whose name is Rowena, and there was an adjudication on that child. So I don't believe that Jacinia, I can't remember whether or not she actually was adjudicated, but I think she has been adjudicated by now. I agree with you that one might consider it a jurisdictional problem. I think it is, it affects the substantial right of the parties. Because
why?
Because of the nature of evidence that has to be presented to the court if you find that ICWA applies.
In the future. Nobody's presenting evidence at the time.
Well, that's true. I mean, the judge's decision laid out the groundwork that evidence would have to be presented that would have to meet that. And I think because of that, there was a necessity to file an appeal. Because if I lose the right to appeal that, the danger is, as a practicing litigant, that you lose the right to bring that as an issue.
So if you don't lose, if we don't have jurisdiction, there's no harm because it goes back and that issue will have never effectively been raised.
That's true. Although I would say that I recently... Because then the court can make whatever determination they make, and there may be a separate appeal. Who knows? You know,
determination trigger certain things, for example? Doesn't it potentially trigger that the case goes to tribal court?
It could, but there's also a separate motion which actually has been filed in Jacinia's case that it should be transferred to tribal court, and that has been put on hold pending the outcome of this appeal, because there has been such a motion filed. It could trigger her going to tribal court, the whole case being transferred to tribal court. It also triggers that you have to present expert testimony that physical or emotional harm may resolve. I do believe it's a substantial...
Does it affect what efforts need to be made and so forth?
It does. It requires active efforts by the state in order to be sure that the child is not removed from the Indian parent. So yes, it triggers a whole substantial number of things and actually is a very important determination in order to go forward. So I believe that in the juvenile court system, it triggers substantial requirements.
But they're still running the problems. When you say it triggers it, none of those things occur. And in other words, the whole issue about transfer to tribal court never arises unless someone files a motion which is either granted or denied. And then, and only then, I suggest, do you have an impact of ICWA. The same with efforts. People may make judgments if they decide to proceed only with reasonable efforts and not active efforts. At some point, that may have a consequence. But it really strikes me what we have is an advisory opinion that simply doesn't affect anyone's present rights. It's all future.
I would disagree. Well, I think the case got put on hold while the court waited from the time I filed a motion to determine ICWA applicability for the period of a year before she decided whether or not it applied. That's why that demonstrates what a substantial issue and a substantial right of the parties is to determine what framework we're going to try the case under.
But I suggest would be a dramatic expansion of appellate jurisdiction.
Well, I think it does affect the substantial right of Jesenia H. to decide whether or not ICWA does apply and whether or not those provisions, you know, what it actually even affects which court decides it. Because if ICWA doesn't apply, there's no question that you don't take jurisdiction to the Native American court. So it affects what court tries it, it affects what
You're saying it predetermines a motion to transfer. That's your...
It would, yes. I don't think there's any dispute as to that.
The parties no longer would file such a motion.
Well, I agree. The parties had already filed the motion.
Does that mean that the motion is in effect automatically granted?
Well, it doesn't mean it's automatically granted. So I do agree with you, Judge Castle, that in the event, I mean, she decided ICWA applied, the Native American, the tribe had already filed a motion to transfer, but that motion to transfer has, I agree, has not been heard yet. So to that extent...
Is the motion to transfer part of the record in front of us?
I believe I did make it part of the record, but there's no ruling on the motion to transfer because I filed the appeal. And so the judge has not decided the motion to transfer.
If we were to send it back down to the juvenile court now, the hearing would go forward as to whether or not it should be transferred, correct?
That would be true.
And then would you appeal immediately after that?
If it got transferred, I most assuredly would. So, I mean, yes. But I think that, I mean, there are a number of cases in juvenile court where you decide that it affects the substantial rights of a party, and therefore it is an appealable order. And it is a difficult decision to make as a litigant on what is and what is not an appealable party. In fact, there is a, I've had a case in re Ethan M. that had been to the Court of Appeals 6 different times, and it appeared to me that there was decisions made that we should, you know, that the state had to give the father a chance to reunify with his child. And on the final appeal of in re Ethan M., they said, well, this situation's already been in place for a number of years, and now, even though he'd appealed, every time there was a final order, and they said, well, he hasn't had visits with his child for a number of years, and so nothing is new here, and so he lost his appeal. And in juvenile court, that's a problem that we face. I mean, I do think this affects the substantial rights of all the parties, including my client, Jesenia H., and I know my time is up, and we really haven't gotten to the meat of the matter, but I do agree that the jurisdictional question is a big question. And if the court says I'm too early and that we don't have jurisdiction, that it doesn't affect her substantial right, then later on there may be other appeals, depending on what happens. And I don't think it's an advisory appeal. I think it's a substantial right of the parties to decide which court decides the case, and what the rules of evidence are, and all of those issues. It's a substantial right. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Lozano, good morning.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm actually Danielle Savington here on behalf of Lisa Lozano.
I'm sorry.
She is the attorney for the mother in this case, Monique M. And leaving aside the jurisdictional question for the moment, I think that this issue really hinges on one simple document, the document that was executed by Monique M. at the time of the child's birth, and what her intent with that document may have been. The appellant would argue that the intent of the document was to destroy the Indian family. I would maintain that her intent was actually the exact opposite. if we take the document as a valid document, and I'll get to my reasoning there in a minute, but if we take it as a valid document, we have to look at why would a mother, 20 minutes after giving birth to a child, give that child away? And I think that in this circumstance, when you look at it, it's a Native American mother on Native American land with a Native American child who has had previous adjudications and relinquishments, and her method and her thought process in executing such a document, I think it's clear that in advance of the birth, she gave great thought to the idea that if she were to give birth to this child and take that child and raise it in her own home, there's a strong likelihood that the state would take, they would take issue with that.
All of this goes to the merits. You had the advantage of listening to the colloquy about jurisdiction. What's your view about that?
In terms of the jurisdiction, I would agree with the court that it is an interlocutory order, the judge that has made here. I don't believe it's a final order, and it could very well change. However, from a practicing standpoint, I do acknowledge it's fairly uncommon for a judge to allow the tribe to intervene and then subsequently kick the tribe out. As to whether or not transfer by the tribal court would be granted or not, we haven't gotten that far in the case, so I can't say whether or not that would happen. I don't necessarily, allowing a tribe to intervene does affect substantial rights because obviously it creates an entire set of protections that aren't present in a traditional, in a typical juvenile court case. But I do acknowledge that it doesn't predetermine the course that the case will take, and it doesn't necessarily set a course of action that isn't going to be changeable in the future depending on the needs of the child or the best interests of the child.
Well, once it goes to tribal court, it's not coming back, is it?
That's true. If the judge decided to allow, to grant the motion to transfer, then at that time, you're right, it wouldn't come back.
Is that motion in this record?
It is not in the record that I have before me. And as far as I understand, it's kind of been put on hold until this has been determined.
There is jurisprudence, of course, that the granting or denying of a motion to transfer is an appealable order.
This is very true.
But at this point, don't have either a grant or a deny of a motion to transfer.
Absolutely, and I know counsel indicated she would consider appealing at that point in time, in which point we would have an entire another set of circumstances to discuss. But I do think that at this point in time, simply allowing the court to allowing the tribe to intervene is kind of part and parcel with how things are done when the ICWA issue is raised in a court at the trial court level.
What else would we know if the case came back on a ruling on the motion to transfer?
Well, I think if it was sent back down and the motion to transfer was heard and granted and then appealed from, I think at that point in time we might have more information as to the intent of the tribe and the placement for the child that the tribe intends to look for and consider. There would probably be more examination into the validity of the transfer of custody that Monique M. had attempted to.
What more would we know about the legal issue about the application of ICWA or the inapplication of ICWA?
I don't think there would be terribly much more information as to the applicability of it than we already have. I mean, the standards for eligibility of an ICWA case are pretty well.
Are there facts in dispute that would preclude our consideration of a jurisdictional issue?
I do not believe so. I believe the facts are fairly well accepted by all the parties, so I don't think that there's anything to dispute in terms of factual basis, with the exception, perhaps, of the document of custody. Which leads me back, then, to the document of custody, which I really think is where this hinges upon, is whether or not it's a valid document at all. And the appellant believes that it is a valid document. And if we view that, again, we have to talk about her intent, and our position is that her intent was to actually preserve that Indian family by setting the child up in an Indian home on the reservation with a family member who would raise that child in a custom with the culture and the traditions of the tribe. And also, the document specifically lays out, you know, time for Monique to spend with her daughter and to continue that family bond. Additionally, I think it's really important to point out that if we view this as a valid document, we have bigger jurisdictional issues than whether or not ICWA applies, because then we have a custodial parent, that parent being the cousin Lolita, who hasn't been noticed, who hasn't had any allegations made against her in the juvenile court, who wasn't given an opportunity to have attorney representation or participation in the temporary removal hearing, and that in and of itself creates some major due process issues. So in and of its face, we have to recognize that the state, when it removed Xenia, took the document as an invalid document. And I believe that their justification for rendering it an invalid document really goes to the fact that, specifically to ICWA, you require 10 days post-birth before a child can be, a document can be effected to grant custody or adoption of a child who has Native American heritage. And from that perspective, if you view it from an invalid document, then what you have is a Native American child removed from the custody of a Native American parent, and that is the direct circumstance in which the Indian Child Welfare Act was created to apply to. So I think whether you view the document as valid or invalid, bottom line, you have a Native American parent, whether that parent is Monique M. or Lolita, who has had a Native American child removed from their care, and those are directly the circumstances that ICWA applies under.
Is the document ever filed with any governmental entity?
The document, to my knowledge, was not ever filed, but it was notarized some months after it was executed. But there has not been any, there's no argument as to the fact that the document was actually executed 20, 25 minutes after the birth of the child. But it has since been notarized, but not executed in front of a competent judge, as, again, would be the second prong of an ICWA mandate in order to transfer custody of an Indian child. So at the end of the day, I think we can't view it as a valid document that would destroy an Indian family for the two reasons that it's the mother's intent to preserve her ability to have an Indian family in place by planting, by giving parental duties over to Lolita. And secondarily, if Lolita is in fact the custodial parent, as that document would allow, then we've committed an egregious foul in not noticing her and bringing her into the case long before now, so that as a custodial parent, she could have the due process that's, you know, provided to her.
The child was removed when she was in Monique's possession.
Yes, the child was spending a weekend day with Monique here in Lancaster County.
So at least at the moment of removal, the child was not with the, what you would characterize, I take it, as an Indian custodian and something.
Correct. If we were to view the document as valid, then the child is with a biological related babysitter. And if we were to view the document as invalid, then the child is with its custodial mother as she's exerting her parental rights and obligations here in Lancaster County. Few moments left, so if anybody has any further questions, otherwise I will wrap it up for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Ted Bish Farm, Inc. versus Southwest Fencing Services, LLC.